there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Hardwood Handicappers, VSiN's premier NBA betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel and Kelly Bidlin.
All right, welcome in another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Only one episode this week. That's this episode with Kelly Bidlin, who joins us here as he usually does. We record these on Thursday nights, and it is quite the Thursday night of NBA action. Just one game, Dallas Mavericks and the Detroit Pistons. Dallas currently down 3 points to the Detroit Pistons. We'll talk about the Dallas Mavericks in a sense, because we're going to discuss Luka Doncic, because I'm sure, because we will discuss MVP coming up in a little bit, as well as one of the themes that I wanted to hit on, which was water finding its level for some of these teams that everybody was like, oh, they're going to make it to the playoffs. They're great. Settle down. There's a long season. But we begin this, as we do every episode, with the headlines of the week in the association.
Hardwood headlines.
All right, Kelly, first up, I actually wanted to get a really dramatic start to this show and tell you about what my week was, because it was quite the dramatic week and chaotic, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to tell you about my middle-of-the-night emergency clinic visit with my small child who had croup. Chris Middleton.
Oh, dude, it's terrible.
I was up from like 2 to 6 in the morning. It was great. I had fun.
Oh, man. Is he okay?
Oh, yeah. He's alive. I feel like if he wasn't, I wouldn't be doing this with you.
He's alive. Okay.
I do.
That answers the question fine.
I do always enjoy that question, because like Ben was like, I texted Ben Fox, our you know, boss, our editor for the digital side earlier today. He's like, is he okay? I wanted to respond with, Ben, if he wasn't, you wouldn't be talking to me right now.
But no, he's okay. I think there's different ranges to that. The one I always crack up about, it's like when I'll be visiting my mother or something, and she'll be like, all right, well, let me know when you land. And it's like, Mom, believe me, if I don't land, you're going to hear about it.
I actually, that's a good point, because I always think that invokes like some bad juju. Like, cause like I get that all the time, or like, you know, recently I traveled a lot. Like I had I think like 6 flights in the last 2.5 weeks. This actually might've been 7. Like I've been traveling a lot the last couple of weeks. Right. And like every time my wife was like, please be safe. And I was like, I really don't have any control in that.
Like, I don't have much control over that.
Once once this plane starts rolling, it's out of my hands. And we're that's great. Good luck. All right. Chris Middleton. He's going to return on Friday for Milwaukee. This is big news for the Bucks. They had hit not a skid, but a somewhat inconsistent stretch of play for Milwaukee. They got off to a really hot undefeated start. But since then, they've been playing 500 basketball for the most part. Got the win over New York the other night to put the cap on what is now currently a 3-game winning streak. But before that, they'd played 5-5 basketball over the course of 10 games. So this is big for Milwaukee. I mean, this is the biggest thing for the Bucks at this point was just health and consistency of availability. And now we're going to start to see this team fully formed. Jrue Holiday had missed some time in that stretch of 500 play. What I find really interesting here, Kelly, is seeing this team fully formed and what they're going to look like in comparison to a Boston Celtics team, which I tried to step in front of the other night and absolutely just got steamrolled by their offense. Yeah. But I'm very excited to see what Milwaukee looks like fully formed as we move forward here with Chris Middleton back.
Yeah, I mean, jump in if you disagree, but I think it's I think we expected the Bucks and Celtics to be the top two teams in the East, at least I did entering the season. And look, they've looked the part so far, right? And I think what you just said is big there. I think it's not just Middleton coming back for me. It's the fact that this whole team is kind of rounding into shape now, right? Like this is the team that we should expect to see throughout the majority of the season. And pretty much every main contributor is healthy right now for them as soon as Middleton comes back. And I think that's, they've had spots where when they have looked bad, I think over the past few weeks, you just kind of look at who's out on the floor, and it's one of those, well, if Giannis isn't getting much help, you know what I mean? Giannis and, you know, Brooke Lopez, who's had a heck of a season. You know, it just feels like he's not getting much help. So I think it's, yes, Middleton obviously coming back massive. He is a star in this league. But you just all these guys being healthy and them having depth and us getting to see how they're going to utilize this depth. You know, I think as far as minute distribution between guys like Grayson Allen, George Hill, and Carter, and Nwora, and Connaughton, and stuff like that, and who's going to be, you know, the first couple guys off the bench and stuff like that. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing over here over the next next few weeks as these guys all get healthy and play together a few games.
Yeah, Javon Carter's been getting big minutes for them. Javon Carter's not a bad player, but he's not going to be starting for this team once they are fully formed. And they still have waiting in the wings by the time we get to a little bit later in the season, Joe Ingles. Recovering from that torn ACL. So that's what I'm really, I actually thought. So to your point, you know, you said, stop me if I disagree with you. I don't. Like, Milwaukee and Boston were the top two teams in the East for me. I thought the Joe Ingles signing was the sneaky, like, awesome signing of the offseason, right? Like, once he's fully healthy, to have him, a team that really struggled to shoot the ball consistently outside of the main cogs in the postseason last year, once he's fully healthy, a smart team defender as well, he's going to be huge for them coming into the postseason. I think
another quality guy to help run the offense too, right? I mean, he is an underrated, you know, distributor, ball handler, all that stuff. So yeah, it's massive. Look, clearly I was just getting excited about Middleton coming back and kind of seeing what we've already seen from Milwaukee, but you're right. Like, Ingles being available will be massive for them down the stretch.
So that's why I thought coming into this year that Milwaukee was the best team in the Eastern Conference, fully realized once we got to the end of the year.
And me too.
Having said that,
you're rethinking somebody, with Boston's success too, so far. I mean,
like just watching them, and like part of me thinks, part of me thinks that the sustainability of the offense, I do have like some questions about. Dude, they're shooting the ball like crazy. Like, they're taking over 40% of their attempts from three. They're nearly shooting. I'll double check. I think they're actually almost shooting 40% as a team. Like, there's part of me that thinks, like, can they keep this up? But no, they can. Like, they're deep enough. Their offense is great. They have guys. They have multiple creators on this roster in terms of their offense. And here's the thing. They clearly have a little bit of a weakness right now. Their defense has not been good. I think they're like 16th right now in non-garbage time defensive efficiency. Once Robert Williams comes back, that's going to be fixed. Yeah. I'm very much considering, like, there's not much separating them in my ratings anyway when they're fully formed, but man, Boston, think about this. They take 44.5% of their shot attempts from beyond the arc, and they shoot 41.4% on those shots.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think yes, we should expect that rate to drop a bit, but at the same time, you just have guys. I mean, your two main stars can attack the rim at will, and they're two of the best in the league, and that's not going to stop, right? You know, it's kind of one of those things like you talk about with Giannis. Well, I don't need him to have consistency with a jump shot, really. You know, what he can do athletically as far as getting to the rim and attacking there and going to the free throw line, that's where he does his damage at. And sure, Brown and Tatum put up a lot of threes, but I think as long as those guys are in attack mode, it doesn't really matter. You put shooters around them. You want them trying to get to the rim and creating from there. And I said it today. These guys, Tatum, Brown, we had all the conversations over the years of, can these guys play together? And now that they've matured and you see what kind of players they are as stars in this league, I mean, we're at the point, JVT, where like the Celtics, as long as they don't screw this up themselves, should be in the running for an Eastern Conference title every year for the next 10 years. I mean, as long as there's not injuries, as long as you have those two guys together, you should always be able to build around them, and you're going to be in contention. I think those two guys are that good and will be that good for the next 10 years.
And the thing about Boston now recently, and like I mentioned, so I took 9.5 with Miami. And by the way, they play again coming up on Friday, which we'll get to a moment, you know, a little bit later in the pod as we look ahead to Friday. I would, and probably am, going to make that bet again, although we've seen the market adjust. This thing's opening 8.5, and I got 9.5, and it closed 10 once Jalen Brunson was announced. But the crazy thing is, Kelly, with Boston, as this was a Chris Middleton story, but we've changed it into a conversation about Boston, which rightfully so, because Boston's been awesome. We haven't talked about it much on this podcast. They're covering numbers, and like, they're covering big numbers. Oh, you know, I made the argument Part of the reason why I bet Miami was just the number itself. They closed laying 11 against Charlotte and then laying 10 against Miami. There's not a 1 point difference between Charlotte and Miami.
No matter how banged up Miami is.
I'd make that bet 1,000 times. And in fact, there is not just a 2.5 point difference between Charlotte and Miami. I'm going to, it's the, what's the goofy meme? I'll have to do it again. You know what I mean? And I'm going to do it again with Miami because just out of principle, that number's too big, barring anything injury wise. But, like, look at the late 10 against Miami. Strong end of the fourth quarter. They end up covering that. They have won 5 straight and covered 5 straight. The closing numbers, 10, 11, 7.5, 7.5, 5.5 against Dallas, who I would say it was only a 13-point deficit, but they smoked and they were never really in doubt of losing that game. Their power rating is just going up, and they're still just covering numbers, no problem, dude. It's nuts.
Well, we've seen them. I mean, I don't know if they currently have it. I know as of, like, 5 days ago, they had set the record, right, for highest offensive rating through whatever X number of games in NBA history. I mean, that's what you're getting out of the Celtics these days right now. And look, if there's, I think almost all the value from a betting standpoint as a side goes is sucked out of them by now, right? So I think, like, the only side you can really play in that game is Miami, like you're talking about. But I'm going to let you step in front of the freight train on that one. I'm staying away.
But because you're right, that was a couple of days ago. They still obviously lead the league in offensive rating. To give people a sense of how good Boston has been, though, the gap between them and Denver, which is second right now in non-garbage time offensive efficiency, is 4.9 points. That is the same gap between Denver and the 13th ranked team, Milwaukee, which is 112.8. So you're talking about,
it's
so nuts, man. They've been ridiculous. So they deserve props. And we'll actually get back to them too a little bit because, again, we're going to talk about MVP and we do have a new favorite to win most valuable player. All right. So from there, so I stepped in front of that train. I also stepped back onto the Minnesota Timberwolves train the other night. Without Karl-Anthony Towns, the Minnesota Timberwolves played their first game against the Memphis Grizzlies, and a successful step onto the train. Memphis ended up losing in that game. The road struggles for Memphis, I think, are kind of real. We can talk about that in a moment. But my thought process, Kelly, was I'm not sure. I don't want to say they're better, the Minnesota Timberwolves, without Karl-Anthony Towns. But there's a case to be made that, and I wrote about this a little bit when I made the play the other day, which is you can make the case that the floor opens up a little bit more offensively for them without Karl-Anthony Towns out there. And their defense not gets better, although the defensive rating for them against Memphis was awesome. But think about who you put out there instead of Karl-Anthony Towns. It was Kyle Anderson. Yeah. So now you've got Kyle Anderson and Anthony Edwards. Yep, two really solid defenders out there with Rudy Gobert at center. All of a sudden, your starting lineup has some real potential defensively. Not that Karl-Anthony Towns, again, is a sieve, but still, that switchability, that's at the point of attack defense. I don't hate the notion of kind of consistently supporting Minnesota without Karl-Anthony Towns until the market kind of adjusted. That was the other part of it. Like, Memphis opened up laying 4 on the road against Minnesota. They were laying 4 in Memphis like 12 days ago. It's a really extreme jump in terms of a rating there. But, what would you make of that thought process moving forward here for Minnesota without Karl-Anthony Towns? Because their schedule here, again, lightens up. OKC, Indiana, Utah, 2 games against Portland. It's part of a West Coast trip.
Man.
Clippers, Oklahoma City. It's not the hardest schedule in the world.
It really opens up. Yeah, those are definitely some winnable games. I think it's big they capitalize on those. I think with, you know, adding Gobert and all these guys playing together now too, not that Gobert is going to take up too many shots, but I think it does. Maybe it it simplifies things a bit for this team, just not having so many mouths to feed, right? Not so many guys you try to need to get X amount of shots a game and stuff like that. So yeah, maybe it does. Maybe it helps them adjust. But I think the bigger thing though is once he gets back, this team. I don't know. You and I and a lot of people had high expectations for them, and you just really haven't seen it yet this year. I mean, it's kind of the one team as far as high expectations that I feel I've been the most off on for, you know, heading into the year. So, yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that there is going to be some market overreaction, especially these first few games. I think they could be a bet on team right now. I'm with you on that one. But yeah, I'm interested to see what this team's really going to look like when Cat gets back in there, because right now they're Memphis is even a team that I wasn't as high on as a lot of people heading into this season. And then, like, Morant, though, is even playing better than I would have expected him to play. And I'm still not that high on that team, especially with Desmond Bane out. Like, I think it's almost unfair to judge them as a team right now. But man, yeah, no, to your point about Minnesota though, yes, I think that, at least in the near future, and especially against those teams you just listed, yeah, I think they're a bet on team. They need to win those games though. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is where you haven't gotten off to a great start. And even with Carl Anthony Towns out, you need to be able to get to win a lot of those games you just listed.
And one of the things that I think really sticks out about like what potentially could happen, and it's not like they were great in transition defensively against Memphis in that win over them. They were much better in terms of their half-court defense. They only gave up, how about this, Memphis offensive rating in the half-court against that new defensive-ish lineup, 64.9. It was terrible. They were awful in the half-court against Minnesota. But the factor that I was going to show was you're not going to run on them as much. Like if, you know, watching some of the press conferences for them after some of these games and you look at some of the numbers, one of the things that stuck out and that they've talked about a lot, Chris Finch has talked about a lot, is teams are like, all right, you guys are going to play big. Every time we rip off a rebound, we're sprinting.
Yeah, we're sprinting, running.
And we're going to force you to get back there and see if you can do it. And they've been kind of poor in transition defense. And again, they like ratings wise, they were kind of poor against Memphis. But I wonder how much better that gets without Carl Anthony Towns out there with Rudy Gobert.
I think it does. I think it does. Again, I think you know, eliminating him from the lineup right now, I think it just simplifies your roles, right? I think it makes everybody's role a little bit more obvious and light. And yeah, you don't get stuck in situations like that where you knew that was something they were going to have to figure out all season, having both those players on the court.
Yep. And on the Memphis note, because I mentioned their road struggles, so there's a couple of things. First off, 2-8-2 against the spread on the road this season, the Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah, 5-7 straight up. So they have not really been performing that well. And they have closed. So let's see. I'm getting bad at math. That's 12 road games. They have closed as the favorite 8 times in those games. So the market, again, you know what I mean? Really kind of, first off, home court for those, we haven't really brought it up a lot. It's worth just over 3 points so far this year. We've seen
a really
big... Is that
what it's still coming out as? Yep. I remember you dropped that on me, you know, 2 weeks ago or whenever we did this. I couldn't believe it was hovering around that 3 point. So
yeah. No, it's been crazy. Like, it's a full swing, like, in the other direction from last year. Last year was barely over a point, depending on how you measured it out. This year, though, it is just worth over 3, and it has not really, like, started to climb back in the other direction. It's been nuts to see it. And, in fact, you could really make the argument, Kelly... like some people, I know Tom Byrne, who joins us regularly on this, who hosts SiriusXM, he's a really good NBA capper. Oh, yeah. He likes to use average non-garbage time net rating and adjust for pace. You can make the argument it's actually worth nearly 4 points in terms of home court. So if you do it that way. But either way, so they've been laying numbers on the road in a season in which home court has meant something a little bit more. So that's something. And also, I have a buddy who he doesn't necessarily make fun of me, I think, but he's always like, like every time he brings up my my piece as a promotion, he's like, and you'll find in there every week that the, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies are not really good at defense. And I'm like, that's kind of the case. They've gotten a little bit better. I don't know what you mean by that, but really, it's just a team that's kind of barely been getting by. Plus 2.3 net rating and non-garbage time, but they're laying points like almost every single night.
I'll tell you, man, I'm trying to think of how many bets I've even had on them this year. I don't even know if I've had a single one. If I have, it's one or two, but I bet against them a few times.
Yep. Yeah. If you go by Cleaning the Glass has a great, they actually track spread differential relative to the Vegas spread, you know, essentially how they cover or how much they fail to cover by. Memphis 22nd in the NBA right now, failing to cover on average by 1.7 points per game. So one of the more overvalued teams. Do you know who the worst team is in that regard?
Oh, gosh. I have no idea.
Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that makes Minnesota. Sense. Now, the real shocker is going to be the second worst. Who's the second worst by spread differential? Who's the second worst team in the NBA?
I would think Golden State's up there.
It's close. They're third worst.
Season. They're third worst. Okay. Philly?
San Antonio. San Antonio has just been getting smoked.
They've just been awful, man. Well, at least they're the only team doing this right, JVT. If we're talking about these Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes, we've seen all these other teams screwing it up like the Jazz and stuff. San Antonio has come out of the gates strong for the tanking effort, and they have not relented. They are tanking all the way. I love it.
As I like to make my corny joke, they are getting smoked more than a blunt at a Willie Nelson concert. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I know we were going to talk. Yeah, absolutely, man. I don't even know. We were going to talk about it at the end, but one of the, I'm not saying it's a big bet tomorrow, but one of the shortest handicaps of my life was looking at the Pelicans laying 7 tomorrow. And I'm just like, I'm just going to bet this and tip of the cap, San Antonio, if you actually cover a game, because right now you are just getting run out of the gym every single night. I mean, you're talking about, I'm looking at Clearing the Glass right now for the month of November. You're talking about 29th in offense and 30th in defense. Points per 100 possessions. Like, this team is just awful right now. And they're dealing with injuries. I mean, they're dealing with injuries to some of their most important players. So I don't know. I saw that number. I'm like, 7, not high enough. That needed to be like 8.5 or more for me to not lay it.
All right, last headline to throw out our folks before we take our first break. And this, we can always spend a ton of time here, but Ben Simmons injured, so he's going to miss some time. Doesn't look like it's a ton of time. It's called left knee soreness, among some other ailments that he's been currently dealing with. So we will see what's going to happen. But what I think is interesting here, and this is kind of something I've been pounding the drum about, both in the piece every single day, brought it up on the column a couple of times. One of the angles that I have taken here a little bit is betting these points, rebounds, and assist props for Ben Simmons over. And in the 6 games prior to him getting injured, Kelly, we're talking about 14 points, 8 rebounds, and 6.7 assists per game on 80% shooting from the floor. Granted, these are all like high. They're high. what's the word I'm looking for? They're high average shots. They're all around the rim. He's not really doing anything spacing the floor, but he's doing pretty well in terms of picking and choosing his shots and his opportunities, rebounding relatively well, just looking like a little bit more comfortable. And that's, I think, part of what's interesting about not only how he's been playing, but how I would kind of argue quietly important he's become for Brooklyn. Like, he's their best defender still. Yeah. And if he's starting to look a little bit more like his old self, I mean, this is going to be interesting once he comes back. And now Kyrie Irving's getting more comfortable. Just what this Brooklyn team really is going to be. Like, I don't know if they're going to be specifically a buy-on team. They've been very inconsistent defensively. But they're interesting, to say the least, if Ben Simmons is going to look like old Ben Simmons.
Well, and I think now that you have, so once he gets back, like the rest of the team is kind of healthy right now, right? Except for my boy, Watanabe, you know, except for him. So as soon as you get Simmons back, but you got all your shooters are back healthy finally now, right? So and Kyrie's back, you got all the shooters. So I guess the one thing I've kind of disagreed since the beginning of the season with Brooklyn was just, I felt like they were going to rely on Ben Simmons too much. There was a lot of that coming into the year, right? Like, talking about these different lineups you were going to utilize him in. And I just think you need to look at him as more of an important role player. And I think that's fine. I mean, he's limited for what he can do offensively, but like you said, he's still the best defender that they can roll out there. I think Brooklyn needs to be more concerned about the best ways to use him and not forcing using him. It just felt like it was forced at the beginning of the season. And I think as he was able to, adjust that role a little bit the past couple of weeks, I think that's why you saw some of the success he's had. And I think that's what they need to do going forward when he gets back healthy.
Yeah, they're and what's going to be interesting is, like, what was supposed to be their best lineup has not really panned out very well. That was Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, Royce O'Neal, Kevin Durant, and Nick Claxton. Right now, a -3 net rating. Defense giving up 117.9 points per 100 possessions. But it's only, we're talking about, according to Cleaning the Glass, 262 possessions. So just over 2.5 games worth of a sample size for that
just
lineup.
It's just one of those, I don't know how often you can really have Claxton and Simmons on the court together.
Yeah,
right?
That's the interesting part about, like, what their roles are going to be. And if you look, the interesting part is, if you swap out Claxton for another shooter, whether it's Joe Harris or Seth Curry, you're talking about, with Harris on the floor, plus 2.8 net rating and a 128.2 offensive rating, and Seth Curry, plus 4.8 net rating, a 113 offensive rating, not very good, but their defense is actually much better, 108.5. So these are super small sample sizes, but I think ultimately the takeaway would be, to your point, Nick Claxton and Ben Simmons on the floor together, maybe not so much, but Ben Simmons is essentially your 5 with any of four other shooters on the floor. It might be something that Jacques Vaughn and the Brooklyn Nets want to look a little bit more at.
Yeah, I think it just it depends matchup to matchup, night to night, right? You're playing a bigger team, you're going to roll Claxton out there more. You're playing a smaller team that you can go small against, roll Simmons out there at the five. I like that, but otherwise it needs to be Kyrie, KD surrounded by shooters.
Yeah, the with Ben Simmons and Nick Claxton on the floor together, just on the floor, any sort of lineup, a negative 9.2 net rating for Brooklyn.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, just doesn't really work out very well. All right, let's take our break here on the other side. First off, let's dive into most valuable player. We have a new favorite for the award, I think rightfully so. I made a bet in the market. Kelly made a bet in the market.
Yeah.
So we'll pick each other's bets apart, see if we agree or disagree. And we'll talk about the hot candidate for the award that is not named Jason Tatum.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
All right, coming back here on Hardwood Handicappers. The most valuable player race, one that gets talked about a little bit too much because, as I have said before, Kelly, really, I hate to, it's not gatekeepy, but like MVP is easy to talk about for people who don't follow the league, so it gets talked about a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's very much it. Like, by the time we get to my, you know, my tenure on VSiN, when we're talking about like February, and I'm doing a whole bunch of hits on shows because the NFL's over, every single hit is going to be talking about MVP.
Yeah, you are worn out talking about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I kind of want to be like, guys, just take my answer on a numbers game and just play that clip.
Right? Just so play that over and over again. Yeah.
So,
no, I hear you. And for me, too, it's one of those, as long as he's healthy, this award could go to Giannis Antetokounmpo every single year. So, yeah. I think I'm more bullish on that than most, but this is like the Shohei Ohtani award to me. It's like, as long as those guys are healthy, like they are the answer to who is the most valuable player. We're just getting cute on that.
Yeah. Well,
we just don't want to give the award to the same guy every year, basically.
Zach Lowe and Kevin Pelton, both MVP voters, released, I had a podcast, I want to say a week ago, their top five candidates. Pelton did not have Giannis in his top five, and Zach Lowe had him five, I think, or four, one of the two.
That's insane. I mean, look, the level that Jason Tatum and Luka Doncic are playing at right now, of course, they've had incredible starts to the season. I think they deserve to be where they're at. But you're talking about Tatum plus 260 over DraftKings right now, Doncic plus 260, Giannis plus 280. Works for me. All three of those guys, I think, belong in there, right in the same class together.
Yeah, so that was the headline is Tatum, of course, is the new favorite to win Most Valuable Player, coming off of a performance in which he dropped 49 points on my Miami Heat, 15-25 from the floor. He was a ridiculous 8-12 from three-point range. It was one of those games where every time he rose from the floor, Lazarus from the tomb, I'm like, it's going in. And sure enough, and more often than not, it was going in. But not only just 49 points, but 11 rebounds. Tatum's been incredible this year. He is the best player on the best team right now, which is a very, the casual bar to cross. On the year, 31.6 points per game, second in the NBA in scoring, 7.8 rebounds, 4.5 assists. There's really nothing else to mince words about how good Tatum has been. And might I add, not something I bet, but in the guide, my MVP pick, Jason Tatum. So I might look it on something. Yeah, there you go. That means nothing. So I guess really we don't need to focus too much on Tatum. I think you and I both agree. Like, given his portfolio right now, he has scored over 30 points in four straight games. He's been unreal, and this team continues to win. Not surprising. So with that,
do you agree? Yeah. Do you agree? I know we got a couple bets we're going to get to. Do you agree that Luka Doncic, especially at this kind of number, is just unbettable? I think so.
I mean, they're not going to win enough games. That's the problem.
They're not going to win enough games. I know he's not getting a ton of help around him right now, but that's kind of allowing him to put up even more of these numbers, right? So, I just think that's a bet. I kind of warned people. Like, I love Luka too. Luka is about as good as it gets in the NBA. He's right up there with everybody else, but it's just about the team around him. That's what I keep trying to impart to people. Where, look, I think Tatum and Antetokounmpo are in this race for the entire year. I don't think Luka Doncic is.
No, and here's the problem. Like, if the team was better, obviously, yes. But the other thing that I think worries you, Kelly, a usage rate of 42.3%, his fourth consecutive year having a usage rate over 40, his second year where he's had a usage rate over 42%. And if you're going to ask, like, oh, who cares about that? What does that mean? For those for context, James Harden in his Houston years surpassed 40% just twice. And it was barely over 40%. So the workload for him is immense. He's averaging 37 and a half minutes per game. Like, that's kind of worrisome, like in terms of his availability. His numbers are great, but it does worry you that he maybe gets run down here as the season progresses, even though he is young. That would also worry me on top of the team just not being very good.
I mean, and they're playing, what, 500 basketball right now? And then what happens when Luka tweaks an ankle or whatever, right? And then he goes out and you're going to lose a bunch of games probably more because they really don't have that guy to step in and pick up the scoring load. I just think at the end of the year when you're looking through these resumes, you're going to see him on a 500 or slightly better ball club. And I just don't think you can really consider him with some of these other guys we got in the league. But I know you added a bet. Tell me about it and why you like it so much.
So I bet Steph Curry at 10-1. To win most valuable player. And I hear your yep. So I think it is somewhat self-explanatory for the way that Curry has been playing. But to run through what he's done so far this year, some of the metrics for Stephen Curry when he is out there on the floor, he's been absolutely tremendous. But points per shot. How about this? Points per shot attempt, which is a metric for cleaning the glass. It's total points scored per 100 shot attempts. It includes field goal attempts, trips to the line, including when fouled in the bonus, all these things. 142.1 would by far be his career high by a mile. Like, his next career high was 136. He's been absolutely insane with his efficiency this year. His scoring and just his traditional metrics in terms of his scoring, about 30 points per game. He has been, in terms of plus minus, one of the most valuable players for his respective team. When he is on the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass, he improves his team's net rating. How about this? By 27.7 points per 100 possessions. Jeez. Now, that speaks to how bad this bench has been for them. He has been unreal when he is out there on the floor. His workload is immense, and he's not really backing down in terms of playing back-to-backs or things like that. I still think this team is going to be a top 5-4 seed in the Western Conference. They're starting to find their form a little bit here at this point right now. But at 10-1, for a guy who's been playing at that level, who is going to be on a team that I think is going to seed properly. And what I mean by that is be in a spot where they're going to win enough games that the voters are going to, they're going to care. And we're talking about 31-7-7 essentially for Curry at this point right now. I thought double digits was, I'm like, I'm snatching that up. I'd rather be sitting on 10-1 when he's a top 2 candidate in like 2 months.
Right.
Then miss out on it.
So, and I think when we just evaluate, like you said, me and you are both going to be sick about talking about this market a few months from now, like crazy, because everybody's going to be asking us about it. But I think if you and I feel as strongly as we do about, Tatum and Giannis, right? I think they're going to be up there on the odds board pretty much all season long. So, I think this is, I always try to tell people this with NBA betting and futures that I add throughout the year. What you're always looking to do is try to buy at a low point, right? Try to buy at a dip on a guy. And that's kind of what you're doing with Steph right now. And I think you're buying on at the right time. I don't mind that one at all. I like it. I think if we take a walk down narrative street too, like the voters would be tripping over themselves at an opportunity to give MVP to Steph Curry. Like, are you kidding me? And that's kind of what the one bet I made recently in this market, kind of along those same lines, was, I'm sitting there, I'm kind of looking through some stats, and looking through odds and stuff, and seeing Kevin Durant hover around 25-1. And I was finding him at a shop here in town in Vegas at 30-1. I'm like, 30-1. And I'm going to throw out one number to you, JVT. This is right now, if the season ended today, this would be Kevin Durant's second best scoring season of his career. So we're talking about him putting up these kind of numbers. And yes, I bet this about 6 days ago, 7 days ago. I mean, his past games, it's been 39 points, 45 points, 31 points, 36 points. I just think buying on these guys at low points at numbers that you might never see again is what you're trying to do when you're betting this stuff during the season. I think you might have done that with Steph. I'm hoping I did that with Durant too. I love having a 30-1 in my pocket with him. And I think that a lot of people are, when we start talking about these voters and the narrative behind a guy like Durant, I think he's going to escape a lot of the criticism that maybe he deserves with how much power he's had with this team. I think they're going to look, we're going to look at the end of the year and you're going to think, well, this team had to go through a coaching change. The second best player missed time. And Durant was the guy who was able to rally the team through it and take them through the playoffs and yada, yada, yada. Right. And I think that's how people are going to look at him. I think they're an easy team to hate, but I think he's the one guy that's going to get some love out of this, from this team as the season goes on. So when I just look at that right now, and I think Kevin Durant, the greatness that he is, having the second best scoring season of his career. Yeah. I'll take a piece of 30-1 and add it to my portfolio for the year.
Yeah, no, I don't. At 30-1, I don't really hate it. I texted Mitch like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, Mitch Moss. We'll have to get on the podcast, talk about it.
Yeah, definitely.
He talks about the NBA with me quite a bit. Although he watches a show, and he doesn't really talk about it. So I don't know. It's like a secret thing, I guess. he's like, he doesn't want to let people know. He's like, I don't really like it that much. I texted him about a week and a half ago, and I was like, because he has this thing. Like, he texts. I don't know what question he asked me. He goes, gut reaction. What do you think about this? So I texted him, gut reaction, Kevin Durant for MVP.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'd want more than like, I think at that time he actually was still pretty high. I think he was like 18-ish to 1 or something like that, at the best price out there.
And that's kind of what he's at right now.
Yeah. And so like, he was like, I'd want like 50-1. And like, I don't disagree. Like, I agree with you. Like, I do wonder, here's my thing. And
I don't think you're ever going to see 50-0. I don't think you're ever seen 50.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to see that either. Yeah. But here's my thing, and because I agree with you in general with the thought of Kevin Durant, what he's done this year, all that kind of stuff. I'll take you back 2 years ago. Remember when I was really high on my James Harden MVP train, and nobody will ever disagree. Nobody will ever talk me out of it. If you watch what he did for Brooklyn when he got there that first season, he was incredible. He was the reason why that they were still at the top of the conference. He was old James Harden. Even when Kyrie came back, he went back to being like a facilitator, but still assist numbers were great. Scoring numbers were great. Fourth quarter numbers were awesome. But the thing that really irritated me in bringing it up to media members and others in NBA circles who had votes in interviews was, I don't like how he left Houston. And my response was, I don't care. I don't care if you don't like it.
Shouldn't matter.
He's a most valuable player. And that would be my worry for you is I think there are some people who would be able to look past that, but there are going to be a few others who are going to be like, yeah, you know what? He did overcome a coaching decision of his own design. And I think those people are stupid. I think that those kind of things should not matter. I think if you're going to be an MVP, it should matter what you do on the court as opposed to the drama that you have like brought onto your franchise. And if he's going to average like 30 and whatever it is now, right? 7, like in terms of rebounding, we'll say, on insanely efficient shooting, and they're a 4 seed in the Eastern Conference, he should get the votes that he deserves.
See that, and you're right. I'm sure a couple people will have that opinion. And look, I'm placing this bet. You said 4 seed. In my mind, they've got to be even better than that. It's got to be 3 seed, maybe even cracking that top 2 for him to get real consideration here. So yeah, I know, even knowing all of that and thinking all that, I still like the bet at 30-1. I think if you shop around out there, I'm just looking at DraftKings right now. He's 18-1 over at DraftKings, but shop around. I bet you can still find something in the 20s. I think it's still a good bet. And, and just like your Steph too, I think you can find something right around the number you got him at still. I think it's still a good bet.
By the way, just pointing out that my Detroit Pistons, I say that because I bet them over their win total, just got their 6th win of the year, beating the Dallas Mavericks in overtime.
Yeah.
Again, dude. And this is actually great too, because I have an under on Dallas in terms of their win total. So either this is a twofer for me.
There you go.
Just win total wagers.
My win totals are looking sick right now. It's been one of those two where I'm like, I go to look at them like every like couple days. Cause I'm like, oh, these look so good right now. Like I've got the, so when I got Bulls alt under 37.5 wins at +250. Yeah. Kings alt over 36.5 at 2-1. Now the Timberwolves alt over 51.5. Not looking so great.
Yeah.
But then I got Pelicans over 45.5. Hornets under 34.5. That's my whole win total portfolio. So 4-5 looking pretty damn good.
I was getting crap the other day about they were called my beloved Timberwolves, right? And how high on, and I was like, yeah, you're right. I was wrong about that. But you know what else I have? I've got under Dallas 48.5. I've got under Memphis 50.5. I've got under Miami Heat. I've got a lot of other stuff in work here.
Right. You're looking dang good there. Yeah. Yeah. And the ones like, I like the alt win totals. I mean, gosh, like I wish more and more of these books have these up, because that was the one where I'm like, okay, Timberwolves, I think they're going to be good, but the one of those, I don't want to play over their regular win total. I want to play over their alt win total, right, because I'm either going to be like really right on this team, or they're just going to kind of be the Timberwolves again with like not knowing how to utilize some of these pieces, right? Which is kind of what they've looked like some more so far than the world beaters we thought they were going to be. But hey, long season to go.
I'm going to have to start tracking these win totals now. I mean, I'm tracking mine, but I always do every year my like win total doc that I like post that people seem to like, the after every day updated wins and losses for win totals. I'm going to have to start keeping track because I don't think I'm looking at this right now. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to start doing this. You want to know why? Because teams like the Pacers and the Jazz who got off, the Jazz, their closing win total, they're just 11 wins away from cashing already.
That's win incredible.
Because they closed 23 and a half.
That's amazing.
It's nuts. All right, wait, real quick, you mentioned the Chicago Bulls.
What did it close, 23 and a half? So you're at 40 and a half right now. Like, these are teams, too. Like, this is something I should probably be looking at more of, betting these win totals now in season, right? I mean, like, the Jazz at 40 and a half.
That reminds me, too. This is the other thing that – actually, I still might be able to get in on this. There are times where I look at something, and I'm like, oh, I got to mark that. I'll come back to that. And I completely forget. Circa had no Jazz playoffs at, like, minus 130.
Oh, my gosh.
Like
recently?
Yeah, well, it was like within the last like 5 days.
Okay, good.
I'm looking right now.
I'm write that down right app. Now to bet that. If that's
well, I'll tell you right now what exactly it is. But like, yeah, dude, these, they don't have them up yet right now. So we'll have to look to see because the game. Imagine we'll pulling off later. All your futures for one game today.
yeah, I know, right? We'll have to look later and hopefully it's before everybody listens to this podcast and goes running like the same thing.
Also, just worth pointing out, and I don't know if you had any thoughts on this, because I brought him up and talked about him at length, I want to say 2 weeks ago or so. This is not but it was worth pointing out. Devin Booker, 51 points against the Chicago Bulls the other night. He was, Kelly, 50-1 to win MVP a couple of weeks back. That's when we had the podcast episode here. Mentioned adding him to the MVP portfolio, which I did at that time. And he is now down to like 20-1. So I'm not sure how realistic it is, but it is worth pointing out. Chris Paul has not played. Cam Johnson has not played. This team is still the one seed in the Western Conference. And while they're much worse defensively without Chris Paul, he's been awesome. And yeah, he had 51 on 20 of 25 shooting. He is, and he's one of those where very quietly last year, a lot of people were like, Devin Booker should be winning MVP.
Yeah.
He's going to garner a lot of sympathy because of that and because of what's happening with Phoenix. That's just, it's a name to keep an eye on. And I would even say, to be quite honest with you, given the landscape, I would not say no to anybody who has not gotten involved yet at like 20-1.
I wouldn't either. I mean, look, he's a premier scorer in the NBA. This is going to sound so bad. I think that having Chris Paul there, and you're right, what he's doing without Paul, no Cam Johnson there is huge. But I think when you have Paul and Ayton on the team, for whatever reason, it just feels like the past couple of years, he doesn't get the deserved love that he should, right? And I don't know why when Paul gets back, I just don't know why I should believe that's not going to continue yet. So that's the only reason why I wouldn't be betting on him. But I'm with you. Around that number, he's a perfectly fair bet.
I would say this year is the best year for it. By the way, because this surprised me when he got injured looking it up because I didn't know off the top of my head. You know how many points per game Chris Paul is averaging this year?
I don't know, like 14?
9. Okay, like he stunk.
He was off to a rough start.
I wonder if this might be the year. So right now DraftKings does have this up. What would be the price that you would lay up to on the node Utah Jazz to make the playoffs?
Not over $2.
It's exactly two.
I would bet it still then.
I think that is a playable price. And we'll see when everybody else hangs up their markets. We'll see if there's something else to play there. All right, MVP conversation to the side. I wanted to go to, let's play our game really quickly if we could, as we talk about whether things are sustainable or not, and something that we like to call
trend or trash.
We'll kind of like lump these teams in together. You know, it's funny. I always like doing my hits because I always look to the camera to see you. And I always like, will Kelly give me a nod of approval on this take? And if I get a nod of approval, then of course I feel better about my take.
I always tell people that know me, like you, that come on the shows, it's always like, whatever I say into the microphone might be one thing. I am so bad at lying with my eyes and facial expression. So it's always one of those, like, if I agree or disagree with something, like, and I know the guests can always see me on Skype, I'm like, they're knowing exactly what I'm thinking about, what they just said immediately. And the, that's funny you brought that up.
the last time I was on with Gil, the nod of approval that I got was when I brought up, and this is kind of the theme that I wanted for this Trend or Trash. I've lumped them all together, but you know, at the first couple of weeks of the season, I still get this now. I was like, hey, Utah, Portland, Indiana, you know, are these teams going to keep this thing up? And I would kind of, my thought was like, no, like not really. Like they're off the hot starts. Like there's some clear flaws to these teams. They're going to start to regress. And it kind of ties into what we're talking about here with Utah and this price to not make the playoffs. Utah has, they came back against the Clippers the other day. They were down at halftime and they came back and won that game. But this is still a team that before that win over the Clippers, they were 2-8 straight up. I think it was 3-7 against the spread in the 8 games prior to that victory. Second worst defensive team in the NBA. Their offense is fine. Still very good. In fact, you know, I bet against them. It's funny. So how about this? You like this scenario? I bet Chicago on Monday, right? But I had to fly to Fresno to go pick up my family and then drive them back. So all in one day, I flew to Fresno, stayed there for an hour, and then got in the car and then drove my family 6 hours back home.
Good times.
It was fantastic. So what I did to keep myself awake at that, you know, during the night drive and at the beginning of it, I listened to the entirety of a basketball game on the radio. I listened to Bulls Jazz, like the Bulls radio feed, the entire way. It was quite the experience from beginning to end. But I bring that up because part of the reason why I played against them was I think this team's slide is for real. I think against some better offensive opponents, like Chicago does have the tendency to be better offensively and a good rebounding team, which I think is really big against Utah. If you can rebound well, it's massive.
It's good rebounding teams.
Look at some of the opponents that they have lost to too. It speaks to that. But this slide for Utah is real. They're going to start to look more and more like the team that we expected them to be at the beginning of this season. They're going to sell off pieces, it would seem, by the time we get to the trade deadline, because there's a couple of guys on this roster they can get first-round picks for still that are role players for them.
You have to. There's too many good role players, good players that would be good role players on winning teams out there. Like, you have to get rid of some of these guys.
So that's kind of the trend of trash here. I wanted to lump them all together, but Utah has been starting to slide. Portland has not had Damian Lillard, but still, I think that this is real. Damian Lillard is going to make them a better offensive team. But Portland comes into, as we talk about this, they go into Friday 1-7 straight up. I've got them at 2-6 or 2-7 against the spread in their last 9, whatever it is. They have not been playing good basketball. They are now 11-11, 500, and losing some basketball games. And the Indiana Pacers, who are they're a little bit more consistent than the others, but still 12-9 now, have not strung together consecutive wins over the last 5 games. So trend or trash, these 3 teams that we're discussing here are falling back down to earth despite surprising starts.
Jazz, Pacers, trend, absolutely. We've been talking about it. I completely agree, and I think they'll continue to slide. Portland, I'm not going to say trend or trash. I think they're a team that's going to be I think they are who I thought they were at the beginning of the season. I think they're right on that kind of play-in area, and I think they're going to be there the whole year. I do think there's enough talent here to keep them in that playoff chase. I think obviously, like you said, Dame being out right now, that's a major injury for them. So they're a team that's been tough because they've been over the past 3 or 4 years of my NBA betting, I would bet you Portland is top 3, top 5 of teams I've bet on. I feel like I've done almost nothing with them, either bet on or against them this year, because I wanted to see what they were going to look like, really with Jeremy Grant in there, and how are Simons and Lillard going to play together. Now with Lillard on the bench, it obviously sets them back a bit, but I'm not going to overreact one way or the other with that team. I didn't overreact to the hot start. I knew that was they weren't going to be quite that good the whole season, but I'm also not going to overreact if they drop some games here with Lillard out. I think this is a team that's still going to be pushing for a playoff appearance here.
I think that's fair. I think when you're talking about the best player on the team not being available, I would not want to commit to any projections for that team than what they have shown us. But I'll say what I'm interested in, and this is something I brought up before in writing about them, was just the fact that their numbers offensively have not been great with Lillard on the floor, and obviously with him off the floor, they've been much worse. So you wonder, you know, he'll make them better. How much better? But they're still, I think they should still be a top 10 seed in the West, especially when some of these teams like a Utah drops out of the top 10, which is going to happen eventually.
Exactly. And I mean, the one thing you can look at, and I just want to pull it up to make sure I'm not talking complete nonsense, but you know, Jeremy Grant, right? Like he's having a good year. Like
he had some stretch of, I think his last three games. I'll pull it up. Keep going.
Yeah. Like me and you talked about this, like, you know, a month ago or whatever. And that was one of the big things I remember you pointing out. It was, well, you're going to get Jeremy Grant from a few years ago, you know, where he was really good, you know, really good coming off the bench for Denver. And, you know, and then kind of that first year in Detroit, are you going to get that? Or are you going to get Jeremy Grant, who kind of just disappears in this offense? And you haven't seen that, right? This really has been an aggressive Jeremy Grant playing offensively this year. And they're getting a lot out of him right now. And if you continue to get that kind of contribution from him, yeah, I think this team can be dangerous.
So he has scored 20-plus points in five straight games. His scoring outputs, 21, 44, 29, 32, and 27. And I forgot about this. This is my favorite stat of the night. So last Friday, I see a tweet, and it was like, I cannot believe, I think it was Law Murray, who covers the Clippers for The Athletic, and he's like, I cannot believe a man today got to the free throw line 28 times. And I'm like going through box scores, because I wasn't going to look it up. I'm like, all right, I want to be surprised. So I'm going through box score. And then I get to the Portland one. Jeremy Grant in that overtime win over the Knicks that day, 21 to 28 at the free throw line. I was like, holy crap, dude. But you're right. So he's been good. It's going to be really interesting. So, all right, I'm glad we agree. I'm glad we pretty much agree on the trend or trash. All right. I also brought this up. I don't think this is worth spending a ton of time on. I think it's just worth pointing out. So the Nuggets 4-0 straight up and against the spread in the last four games. It's pretty much since Jokic and Murray have come back from COVID protocol and their absences. And I just think what's interesting about this, not really much, hey, let's start betting on the Nuggets, although they might be worth it. Cause I think offensively they're pretty good. Very quietly, I want to go back to the NBA guide. I have it on my desktop. I'll pull it up really quickly. I want to say I picked the Nuggets to be the one seed in the Western Conference.
I think I did too.
I mean, Kelly, they're one game behind Phoenix for the one seed in the West.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just going to ask you, let's say, okay, just, what do you, and let's take into account guys that are injured right now, because, you know, Michael Porter Jr. obviously missing time right
you,
now.
You, by the way, really quickly, you, me, and Mitch all picked the Nuggets as the one seed in the West.
We did? Okay, there you go. There we go. So power rank the Western Conference top, let's say top three, right, of what you think they'll be at the end of the season.
Seeding or, like, what the best teams just generally
play? Actual best teams, not seeding. Take seeding out of it.
Oh, okay. The best teams. I'm going to be stubborn. So I'm going to say the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Nuggets.
My point though is it has to be those three, right? Or to me, it's obviously those three.
Any order.
I think you can almost put them in any order and it doesn't matter. I think I would probably go, Clippers and then Nuggets, then Warriors. I don't know if that's exactly what you just said. I think that's what I'd go to, but I think any order you could mix those in. Right. And I think those are your three best Western Conference teams. And that's, I mean, look, I think it's a lot of people might say, whoa, you guys are ignoring the Phoenix Suns out there. But
yes,
I am. I'm okay with that. I don't think they belong with those other three teams.
Well, just really quickly before we get Friday to that point. Yes, I'm ignoring them. But you want to know why? Because their team is structurally the same as it has been the last 2 years, which means their team has structurally the same weaknesses it has had the last 2 years.
Same limitations.
They don't get to the free throw line. They have trouble with big wings. All of those things remain the same, which has eliminated them in the last two seasons. So, yes, I am ignoring Phoenix because they are the same team, and thus I think that their weaknesses will limit them in winning a championship. So, and by the way, if you're screaming at whatever you're listening on, saying the Clippers might stink, I'm open to that conversation, but I'm also stubborn in the fact that I think that health will ultimately win out. These guys will be fine. And that the team that I saw that made me write that glorious piece of the Clippers are the best team in the Western Conference when they were down 3-2 to the Dallas Mavericks, right? I think that team is still there, and we'll see. By the way, Norm Powell the other night, I'm just saying, 22 points in the fourth quarter to beat Portland.
We need him to pick it up. But if you, I know it's a big if, and everybody out there is listening is going to say it's a big if, but if you can have those two guys healthy, Kawhi and Paul George, if you have them healthy, this team is just, they're built how a team needs to be built in the NBA to win a championship these days to me. It always used to be about the big three, right? No, it's about the big two and then loading your rest of your roster up to have a solid eight deep rotation of really good players, and that's what they have. I mean, they're stacked depth-wise. We talk about Norm Powell. We kind of joke about him, but no, he's a great player to be able to bring off the bench, and they have other guys like that. So I just think once you get into the playoffs and those benches shorten, that those guys just have eight guys they can run out at you every night that both offensively and defensively are going to cause havoc for whatever you want to try to do.
All right, we move on to Friday. I'm going to have a big written piece on this, so I won't spend a ton of time here. So I'll give you the floor. It's not the best slate of games. There's some highlights on the day, though. What do you got?
Yeah, it's very chalky for me. I actually put in bets on three games already, JVT. I already mentioned one. Pelicans, I'm just laying the points on the road against the Spurs. I don't think 7 wasn't enough for me. I kind of had it in my head. I'm like, okay, about 8.5, 9 is the line that I'm not willing to cross there. But I'm like, 7 points. I found that a board in town. That's a bet for me. Really not much more I think you need to look at than how these teams have looked over the month of July. I got that pulled up right now. But you're talking about the Pelicans, plus 5.2 net rating. And then you're talking about the Spurs, who, let's see, they won one game and minus 15 on their net rating for the month of November. That's just a massive difference in talent. Again, San Antonio dealing with injuries right now. Looks like McCollum's probably going to be back tomorrow for New Orleans. So that is a bet on for me. The other two that I bet, another smaller one, I'm really chalky tonight for you, JVT, really chalky. I laid 3 on the road with the Wizards at the Hornets. Hornets dealing with some injuries. This Wizards team, everybody kind of healthy now. We've seen Porzingis have a couple big games here and there. I do like kind of the makeup of this Wizards team to be a good team this year. Not a great team, but a good team in the Eastern Conference. I do absolutely think they are a playoff team. So I laid 3 with them. That one a smaller bet for me. I don't really love laying points on the road on Friday nights in the NBA. I think it's one of the nights where you do see a bigger home court advantage with the crowds that turn out on a Friday night. And then the one that's a little bit bigger bet for me tomorrow night, I laid the points with the Nets. I think Toronto on this road, this longer road trip, they got to get back to Toronto on Saturday for a game. I think this is a tough spot for them heading into Brooklyn on Friday night. So I laid the 2.5 with the Nets. You're talking about having Kyrie, having Kevin Durant there, all those shooters. I know you don't have Ben Simmons, but Raptors have struggled on the road too this season, 3-8 straight up. Again, I mentioned what they had to do going back and playing another game on Saturday and in November, Brooklyn second best net rating. So that's a bet I do like tomorrow night. I laid 2.5. Want to leave some money open though to jump in on them live too with that tighter spread. You might be able to do that. Toronto gets off to a fast start in that first quarter. Jump in live on the Nets in the second quarter is a good opportunity. So laid the points with the Wizards, laid the points with the Pelicans, laid the points with the Nets, JVT. It's pretty chalky, but I like all three of those tomorrow night.
Yeah, real quick, the Warriors are going to be on my card again tomorrow, playing them at home against Chicago.
Chicago, just I don't know what their problem is right now, but because they kind of don't have an excuse, right, JVT? Like, this is, of all the excuses they've kind of rightfully had the past year or two, like, the team's there right now. Like, they should be winning games if they expect to really get it done. I just think this is why I played a win total under on them, right? I think they outkicked their coverage last year. They played a little better than they really were. DeMar DeRozan had an incredible season. I think it's just unfair to expect what they did last year again this year.
And the most fascinating, this is not the only thing, but the most fascinating game of the day, which I'll probably be in on, especially there's fives popping up here. Indiana Pacers and Utah Jazz are the exact same team. Yeah, why is Utah laying 5? So
I don't disagree with that. I mean, boy, Indiana's been on the road for a while. Obviously, got to go into Salt Lake. You can make all those arguments. There's a 4.5 at the Westgate. There you go.
So we'll see. But yeah, they're in the midst of a seven or six game road trip.
You got a 5.5 at MGM. There you go.
Oh yeah, baby. MGM's always a little off. Always a little off, depending on what you like.
Yeah, I like it. They're always like a half point. I like it.
Yep. All right, Kelly. Well, it was good to talk to you. Good end of the week episode. It was a chaotic week for me. So for those who are listening, wondering where's the early week episode, this is the only week, or it won't be up there. But a little bit of hecticness, some hospital visits, and some sicknesses in the Von Tobel house. But we're back on track, baby. We're back on track.
Life gets in the way, unfortunately.
Yeah, sometimes it does. But for Kelly, for myself, please, if you could, like, rate, review, subscribe, as always. And we will talk to you earlier next week on Hardwood Handicappers.